Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome, Gloria, Zadie. I see Bubby in the corner, Marina, Arthur, Erwin, and now in person with Toby and Melissa. Please join, feel free to join us. I found a new Schneider, don't worry. Okay, what was that?
I have to remind Moshe that I'm not Zadie tonight, I'm Colonel.
Oh, yes, Veterans Day. So I acknowledge my grandfather who was in Vietnam and anyone else who's a veteran. So we acknowledge you and thank you for your service. Okay, so we are on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. That is 23a. And, well, you could tell since it ends on 24b, we are very close to finishing the Masechta. And in the final stretch, things get more agadic in nature and less halachic, and you'll see exactly what that means tonight. So I just saw Rabbi Wohl earlier. He had a yahrzeit, so he came in to daven with us with a minyan. He's teaching Makos, actually, in Westport at his shul. They're on Daf Yotes. They're on 19. So if you remember, all like the really rough gemaras that had a lot of calculations that we had to keep track of, it all ended on Chaf Amud Aleph on 20a when we started talking about haircuts, shaving. So they're in like the final stretch of all those really tough Gemaras. And I said, don't worry, Daf Chaf, it'll get all easier. You're almost there. So it's nice to hear. Actually, I was thinking there might be 1 week between us finishing the Masechta and when the Siyum will happen. So I was thinking maybe that in between week, we could do some sort of joint program on Zoom with the Beis Chaverim.
That's good.
And Rabbi Wohl and I could teach something.
It was good because I couldn't find a big fry pan.
So that's what,
thought it could be. Which fry pan did you use? One of my good ones?
I'm sorry?
I used my old.
Little guy?
Arthur, just make sure to mute, please. Thank you. Okay.
Sorry about that.
We are on Chaf Gimel Aleph, 23a. All the way on the top, all the way on the top. We did the first three words already last time. And now we are going forward. So Amar Rav Sheshes on the first line. Amar Rav Sheshes Mishum Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah Minayin Ritzushi Shel Egel. How do we know that the whip needs to be made out of a calf? Because it says that you shall hit him 40 lashes. And right next to it, the pasuk says, that you should not put a muzzle on an ox when it is plowing your field. So why we actually learned this in our Chumash class, if you remember, when earlier on when I joined, I think it's Parsky Seitze, if I'm not mistaken. So because it talks about the mitzvah, it talks about a cow in the pasuk right next to it. There, otherwise, these two psukim seemingly have nothing. You know, what's makos have to do with not muzzling your cow when it's working? It must be coming to teach us something. By the way, what else do we learn from the fact that these psukim are right next to each other? What else do we learn from Los Tafs and Shor B'disho? We learn also that in order for you to get makos, it needs to be a sin that is akin to Lo Sachsim Shor B'disho. So for instance, you need to do a maisa of muzzling your animal. And we learned that you have to do an action in order to get malchus. If it's a lashin lokin, lashin b'maisa in lokin alav. So that also, the Gemara doesn't mention it here, but it's interesting that we're learning more than one thing from the fact that there's a juxtaposition.
Are you allowed to bind somebody when you're getting malchus?
Oh, we do bind them. We actually, it says in the Mishnah, we bind them down. Oh, interesting. So Toby points out in the Mishnah, we said we bind the guy down, we tie his arms. It said in the Mishnah at the beginning, Kovis Shtei Yadav Al Ha'amud, that we tie his two hands down. But Toby's saying, maybe we should learn from Losasim Shor B'disho to say we don't tie down the mouth of the cow. You shouldn't tie down the guy when he gets makos. But then the guy could run away. Which, by the way, the case of running away, we'll deal with right at the end, almost at the end of today. Okay, that's point number one. There's going to be a lot of small points over here, little tidbits. So because Rav Sheshes was the one who gave us this drasha to explain something in our Mishnah. The Gemara is going to give us two other interesting teachings from Rav Sheshes, not necessarily relevant to our Gemara, but still worthwhile. Let's see. Amar Rav Sheshes, Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Ninai Levama Shenachal Efnei Mukashchin She'in Chos Menosa. How do we know that a woman who her husband passes away, they don't have children, and so she falls to Yibam to her brother-in-law? So how do we know that we don't just seal her mouth? We let her speak up and say, "I don't want to marry this man if he's has boils all over him, not someone who she's attracted to." We don't force her into that marriage. Rather, we don't shut her up. And we learn it from Lo Sachsam Shor B'Disho. This is Lo Sachsam Shor B'Disho. And the continuation here is that once we're explaining one juxtaposition of Pesukim, we're going to explain the next juxtaposition of Pesukim, that Lo Sachsam Shor B'Disho is right next to the Pasuk talking about Yibam. And when we learned the Chumash together, like, what do all these random miscellaneous topics have to do with each other? Well, they're put next to each other to teach us these dinim, that just as we don't seal the mouth of the cow, so too we don't seal the mouth of this person who doesn't want to enter into this marriage. Now, I feel like Toby, you're about to say something. No? Okay. Okay. Let's have some short with show. Oh, you can say whatever you want. All right. Vamra Sheshes, Mishim Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Kol HaMevasa Es Oz. Kol HaMevasa Es Amoad, Ilu Ovid Avod Azar. Anyone who denigrates the holidays, it's as if they worship Avod Azara. So it doesn't say this over here, but in other places, or I think actually in Pirkei Avos it says this. This comes in Pirkei Avos, and the explanation is that not just someone who denigrates Yom Tovim people generally respect. What do people generally denigrate? Maybe not willingly, but unwittingly. Very good, Toby. Chol HaMoed. Is that actually how it translates in the Aron Scroll? Or you just remembered that?
No, it's in the footnote.
It's in a footnote in Aron Scroll. Very good. So I don't have the footnotes with me over here. Is it Rashi? Does Rashi say it? I just remember from learning it previously. I don't think there's even a Rashi on here that explains it. I mean, Rivan. Where's the Rivan on here? Oh, here it is. Right, Chol HaShomoed. Right, that's only on the top. Esmamodos Chol HaShomoed. Very good. So the Rivan says that. So Dechsev Elohim Masechu Losasalach Usamech Leisachaka Masas Tishmor. Since it talks about keeping all the days of Pesach, not just the first and the last days, Chol HaShomoed is a holiday of sorts as well. Therefore, it's to tell us that if you don't respect the Yom Tovim, it's as if you're worshiping Avodah Zarah. Now, not to detract from the severity of it, but Chazal do this a lot, where they say, if you do this, it's as if you're worshiping Avodah Zarah. For instance, it says, anyone who lives outside of Israel, it's like you're worshiping Avodah Zarah. So either that means it's just really bad, we're living outside of Israel, or this is a hyperbole that Chazal used. Or maybe there's some deeper ethical teaching to what is Avodah Zarah, what's the issue with it, and maybe we can make some nice drasha out of all this. Okay, next. Amar Sheshes Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Kol Masaber Lashon Hara. Anyone who speaks Lashon Hara, right, we all think, oh, Lashon Hara is something made up by the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim did a good job, really, giving us the details of the mitzvah, but of course it's in the Gemara. Anyone who tells over Lashon Hara, the Kol Makabel Lashon Hara, not just telling over Lashon Hara, there's also an issur, by the way, to, if you hear Lashon Hara, to accept that it's automatically true. The Kol HaMeid Eid Sheker, and anyone who gives false testimony, Roy Lashlichu Leklavim, he should be sent thrown to the dogs. Dixiv, because why? Because it's written, Lekelev Tashlichun Oso, it says to the dogs you shall throw him, Usa, or it, not him, it, the Samech Le Losisa Shema Shav, that you shall not accept a false report. Kribe Nami Losasi, you should also read it as not just you will not accept, but in Hifil, you will not cause others to accept a false report. And so we see from here, someone who accepts a false report or gives a false report or speaks Lashon Hara, which is truth, that person, we should throw them to the dogs. Okay. That ends the teachings of Rav Sheshes. So great tidbits, something that I'm sure will be good for maybe a got it to class, maybe in the book somewhere. He cites these Gemaras, who knows? Okay. Now we're going to have rapid fire, a lot of small little sections here, where we're just going to take details from the Mishnah and elucidate them. So here we go. Ushtei Ritsuo. So as you remember, there is the whip is made primarily of an egel, of a calf, but also it has these sinews of the donkey going down it as well. So the Gemara is going to ask, Tana Shelcham. So where do we get this whole idea of using both the donkey as well as the calf? Tana Shelchamur Kedarsha Huglila Alei Rav Chista Yada Shor Konehu Bechamor Evus Balav, that the ox knows its owner and the donkey knows the, I never know if that's the trow, the tro. Trough. Yeah, I always mispronounce that word for some reason. I recognize the trough of its master. However, these animals which can recognize, they know who their master is. Yisrael lo yada, the quote is Ches in the Torah Shalem. Yisrael lo yada ami lo hispona. My nation somehow, they can't recognize me. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, so it's actually poetic justice. Yavo misha makir evus balav, the yifra misha eno makir evus balav. He who recognizes his creator should come and exact justice upon those who do not recognize their creator. So it's not just arbitrary that we use a calf, we use a donkey, but it's because from this pasuk in Yeshayahu, we learn that this is what the whip is, that exacts justice, this whip is supposed to be made out of such material. So I like that one. It's kind of poetic in that way. I'm sure the person getting whipped by it doesn't feel that way, but in academic sense, it's nice. Okay. Yada tefach. Amar Abai, shmamina kochad b'chad l'fun gabe avdina le. So we said, remember that the measurements of this whip, it has to be able to reach the person's belly button and stomach area on the other side. The thing is that people come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. So how do we make sure that everybody is able to have the right length of a whip? Well, Abaye says we have one for each and every shape and size. Amar le Rava, that's ridiculous. In Cain, nafish lehu ritzuas tuva. You're going to aim a dove or so. It's impossible to have an arsenal full of every single custom-made whip that you need. El Amar Rava, what did they do? Of course it had this adjustable bow on it, or adjustable knot. Kiboy miktarbe, kiboy marpeba. When they wanted, they can tighten it. When they wanted, they could loosen it. So, you know, it's I like those shoes that they make because I'm one of those lazy people that don't tie my shoes. So I wear slip-ons during the week. And on Shabbos, I want to get this if I can find it somewhere where it's like a pre-made knot. And then you kind of just like push it into place. So you have the aesthetic of the knot, but you don't have to deal with actually tying it. And not because I'm firm and I won't tie it on Shabbos. I don't think anyone has a firm and not tie a single slip knot. But you know, I'm just lazy. That's all. Okay. Malkin oso minahani nili arakanat amarkwa the pilu hashofet the hikau lefanav kidei rishasa. So the question here is: you see, you don't really see it from the quote that it gives you. It says Malkin oso. What it's saying is that you get 1/3 on the front and 2/3 of the lashes go on your back. How do we see that in the pasuk? This is very obscure, by the way. So we see from here, Risha Achas Milafanav. One Risha, you get punished Kidei Rishaso for how much you deserve in the front. And the implication is Shtei Rishios Me'agav. You get the other 2/3 in the back. And the Rishonim try to figure out exactly how we see that from the pasuk. It's very unclear. It might be that Kidei Rishasu implies one, or perhaps the Bimisbar, when it says Bimisbar, it means a number in addition to additional sets to the original one that's given on the front. And we say Tafasta Maruba Lo Tafasta, which means that since it could be really any number of sets in addition to one, we err to the side of caution. We only do 2 sets more than, well, times 2 more than on the front. It's very difficult to understand, but that's how they darshan from there. I didn't see anything that kind of really just like clicked and said, ah, oh, that's how they figured it out. Okay. Ein Malkin Osto. Amarachisa Rabbi Yochanan, me nine Ritsushi Mukufeles. How do we know? Remember, we said Ritsua, you fold it over and fold it again. So I think you have like eight different things coming out for the whip. How do we know that? Shnemar says Bihipilo. But that word, I mean, Likufe, we need to teach us that you're supposed to have the guy leaning down because you're supposed to bring him down. So we can't use one word to teach two different things. That's a general rule. Only if there's only one teaching per anomaly. In Cain, Lichtov Kra Yatigu. If all the puzzle wanted to teach us to do was to make the guy bend over, it could have just said Yatigu. My Hifilu Shmamina Tarti, because if you look in Rivan, Actually, if you look in the Hagos Tzionim, if you have them over here, I always like to joke, look in the side here, Gemara Hagos Tzionim, which is like the amended text and pointing out Tzion's, like pointing out different things. So I'm always like, oh, that's like the Parish of the Zionists on the Tzionim. Hagos Tzionim was always said the Zionists on the. And you know,
I don't see the word Tzionim.
You look over here, you have. Interesting. It's not in your edition. Okay. I mean, these are the later editors that came in, so it's not in your version. That's interesting. I don't think art school would have it. Okay. Anyway, they say, Kari be vechilo. So don't read as vechilo, but rather vechilo, and you shall double it. Okay. Where are we? Hamake make biyado. Tanarabanan. So here's the question, right? When we want to give this guy a lash, so what are we looking for? We're looking for like this big, burly, jock who's going to go ahead and give this guy the biggest clap he ever had? Or are we looking for someone who, we're trying to have a little mercy, obviously has to put his back into it, but maybe somebody who doesn't work out. Like the heaviest thing they ever lifted was a Bava Basra Gemara. Also, are we looking for someone who has a certain degree of intelligence and discernment and won't get too caught up in it? They won't overdo it. So what kind of personality are we looking for the guy who, not the executioner, I don't know what you call this guy. What's a good name for the guy who gives the knockouts? They don't give one like the art school, what they call him? Okay.
Yeah, just the one administering the lashes.
That's what they call it, the one administering the lashes. I need like a one word. Okay, fine. There's no good English word for it. Okay. So let's go forward. The primary position is that we pick someone who is not particularly strong and also has a good sense. Now, mad over here, it has nothing to do with Torah mad. It doesn't mean pick somebody who has a PhD. It just means someone who has a good personality, a good disposition.
Art school has a very different.
Oh, how does it?
It has superior intelligence.
Superior intelligence. Yes, it doesn't seem to have to do with a nerd. Yeah. you're like that scrawny nerd guy.
Yeah.
Okay, that might be it. So it doesn't seem to be intelligence based on Shah. I mean, you look in. Where's the refund? Where's the refund? The Filachesiri Mada doesn't really give us an explanation for this. Okay, whatever it might be. You'll see what the difference is. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Filachesiri Mada Bisir Kuch, even those who in art scroll lack intelligence, or I'm saying they're lacking in their disposition, and they could be very strong also. So you're talking about like this burly guy with the low IQ, kind of just like the weight, the muscle builder. Amar Rava. Kavosi Rabbi Yehuda Mistabra, right? Yehuda's position resonates more. Why? Dichsiv lo Yosef pen Yosef. It says, you shall not add, lest you add on more lashes. Iamret, Bishlam Achasiri Mada. If we were addressing people who lack the disposition, Hainu Ditzarth Asure. Those kind of people, we would need to give an Ashara. Those people need an Ashara. Right? it seems the Raihu's position is that we are allowed to use someone who lacks the proper discipline, the proper disposition or intelligence to be doing the makos. Why? Because the fact that Pasuk needs to give this person a double warning that lest you add on more, well, someone who's disciplined and won't get too caught up and will listen, okay, 39, done. And he's not going to go, no, one more. So that person we don't need to warn. But who do we need to warn? Those who are chesiri mada, those who don't listen to the rules, those who are not really following and listening. So that's Rabbi Yehuda's proof. Rabbanan say, emezars and elmezuras. We only try to get those who already have a lacquer, those who already have a certain amount of, what's the right word for this? I need to get an adjective here. Those who follow the rules, those who get up and do what they're supposed to do, those are the kind of people that we try to be mizaris even more. So you know what this reminds me of? It's like the classic catch 22 when the rabbi gets up to give a sermon and says, you know, guys, we got to work on coming to davening more. And then everyone in there is like, we're actually here. You should tell the people who didn't show up to shul this morning. So maybe one could say there's a merit to what those rabbis do. A mizars and el mizuras. You need someone who could at least begin to hear what you're telling them. So the people who don't step in at all, maybe they're just, one might say, according to this, it's a terrible formulation, they're so far gone, they won't even hear them, Musser. Whereas people, at least they're willing to come in the door sometime, they might be more amenable to hearing Musser, hearing Chizuk, and coming a little bit more frequent than they already are. I'm not making any push for coming in person to Gemara Shir. That wasn't the connection. But you are all welcome to join me whenever you want. Okay. Tana. Kishahu magbia magbia b'shte yada. Ugeshu make makbiyadu achas. So when he lifts up this whip, it's like a heavy, it's like eight different poles. You lift up with two hands. When you bring it down with one hand. Why? Because so it fully comes from him. What that probably means is that when you bring it, think about it. Imagine you're pitching at a baseball game. No one pitches with two hands. You don't go like, I mean, that's how some people play with dodgeball. That's how they throw the ball. But no, you wind up with both of your hands, you pull the ball back, the classic pitcher, and then you throw it with one hand. So it's a similar dynamic over here. You could bring more force when you're using only one arm. Bakori Kori, next section. So remember how we said that there's someone reading Sukkim as this is all happening? Very similar to those who are involved in the Chevra Kadisha. So, you know, someone's reading on the side as the rest of the members are doing the Tahara. Tanu Rabbanan, Hagadol Shebetayan. So remember, a Beis Din has at least three members on it. So what are they doing when this guy is giving out the makos? Hagadol Shebetayanin, the Av Beis Din, the head of the Beis Din, Kore, he's the one reading the Pesukim. Hasheni Monad, the second one is keeping count. The Ashlishi Omer Hikon, the third guy just like hit him. It's like the funnest job, you know? I'd rather be the third guy. And also, you know, the third guy doesn't have to worry about keeping the count. If I was like the second guy, I'm like, okay, that's two, that's three, that's four. Like, I want to make sure he doesn't overdo it and kill the guy. The third guy just gets to say, hit him. And then like the soldier just, not soldier, I don't know, whatever. The guy who gives the Malkus just keeps giving him Malkus. So it seems like the third to best die and actually gets the funnest job. And I'm just saying from my own perspective. Bizman Shemaka Maruba. So when there's, remember how we evaluate the person? Some people can handle 39 lashes. Some people, they can only handle 9 lashes. So we only have a limited amount of sukkim in our arsenal over here. So what the Bryce is telling us is that when there's a lot of makos, he's getting the full 39. Marech, he say to the pasuk very slowly. And then when there's very little time that you need to spend, you read through it fast. You know what it reminds me of? It's like especially over Yom Tov. I remember Rosh Hashanah. Another time, so when we're in the tent and we're waiting for Birchas Kohanim, so we send every. Okay, so this is what happened. I sent everybody inside to wash the Kohanim inside to wash their hands. Apparently, there were water bottles put under the bima outside of the tent. I thought, you know, oh, this is like for Yom Kippur or whatever, whenever it breaks their fast, they can grab a water bottle and drink it. Apparently, Rabbi Cohen told me afterwards, the purpose of the water bottles was to for the Kohan to wash their hands there. So I only realized after the fact. So why do I bring this up? I want to just close the door? Okay. So, okay. I think there's some kids over there. Okay. So, so what happens is we need to buy time. The issue is if the chazan goes too fast, we might get up to Birchos Kohan, we're up to Ritzay before the Kohanim are already on their way back. So what I kind of do with the chazan is like, I'm like, slow, slow. And then he like sings a song. And then I see the Kohanim come out the main entrance of the shul. They're like on the horizon. I'm like, all right, pick up the pace. Let's go. So that's kind of like what's happening over here. You know, do you really slow on the psukim? Oh, he's about to finish Elijah and then finish up the entire thing. It's like that kind of game. But initially we taught, big deal. If you get to the end of the psukim, you just repeat it over again. So why are we trying to fit it into this time frame? Answer is, mitzvah tzam, same. Ideally, you fit it into the time frame. You don't do any repetition. The lotzin, same. Chozer l'chias ha-mikrim. You can't fit it in, and then you repeat it over again. Okay, seems like a reasonable reconciliation. How are we doing on time? 7:30. We're doing well. We're doing well. Okay, we're already over halfway through. Tana Rabbanan, makaraba. Ainli elam. So it says the pasuk makaraba. Ainli elam makaraba. Makamu etes minayin. So there's two understandings. Makaraba can either mean qualitatively or quantitatively. The Gemara assumes that when we say a great maka means great in quantity of makos. So it sounds like from the pasuk, only if I add on a great quantity of additional makos do I violate the prohibition of adding on additional makos to this guy? But if I only add in makam letis minai, where do I know if I add on one or two extra makos, I'm still culpable for giving the person more than they were prescribed? Talmud Lomar Lo Yosef. It says in the pasuk, Lo Yosef. You shall not add on. In Cain, Matam Lomar Maka Rabba. So if so, if I'm not even allowed to add on one or two extra makos, why did the pasuk have to tell me don't add on many more makos? Well, if I can't add on a few more kalvachomer, I can't add on many more. Limeid our shoshein makaraba. It's to teach me, not quantitatively, but qualitatively, I'm supposed to make sure that the initial ones I'm supposed to give him actually are strong makos rabos. That's what the Rivan says. The Rivan said initially it was in number, but then the conclusion is, it's not balkorcho, they amend it. It's bechol kocho. You're supposed to hit him with all of your strength. Obviously, you're supposed to give him lashes balkorcho. Balkorcho means against his will. Nobody willingly wants the makos. We give it to them anyway. Okay, next section. Okay, so this is the last section before the Mishnah, and this deals with the final part of the previous Mishnah that we are explaining, which is that if somebody soils themselves and humiliates themselves through that, they are exempt from makos. So we will discuss the parameters of that. Tana Rabbanan, whereas in our Mishnah we only had two opinions, here we're going to have three opinions as to how this exception works. Opinion number one, Echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha b'ri'i v'lo b'mayim, divrei Rabbi Meir. So the first opinion is that both men and women are equal in the respect that they both need to soil themselves with excrement rather than with urine. It has to reach that level for them to get exempted from makos. So there's the egalitarian shita. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ha'ish b'riva ish b'mayim. Since for women, the humiliation is a lower threshold, so women get exempted just with urine alone. For men, it would have to be excrement. Whereas the Chachamim say that whether excrement or whether it's urine, both men and women exempt themselves through that. So the other egalitarian sheet, right? Who said the Torah doesn't believe in equality, right? Vatanya, I can't think of that trick too often. Vatanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Echad ha'isha, Echad ha'isha, b'ri, wait a minute. But I thought Rabbi Yehuda taught. We have another Bryce that says, or Yehuda says, that men and women are only exempt through excrement, which contradicts Rabbi Yehuda earlier, who said that a man is with excrement or a woman is with urine. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak Shnei Shavu'i, what he needs to say in other brises is men and women are equal insofar as they are exempt for, due to excrement. But in addition to that, women also are exempt due to urine. So that that is that section of the Gemara. There's also those who are learning Hilchos Shabbos with us in the mornings of Pinyan Halacha might recall there's something called Graf Shel Re'i, which is the same word Re'i, because something which is so disgusting on Shabbos is ruining your environment, even if it's Muksa. Chazal said, look, we instituted Muksa, the rabbis giveth, the rabbis taketh. Same rabbis who instituted Muksa made exceptions built in. One's called Graf Shel Re'i, which is if there's like excrement or something very disgusting, it's ruining the environment around you, you're allowed to remove it on Shabbos. So that's the heter. You have garbage building up in your kitchen, even though garbage is inherently muksa. That's what garbage is. Has no use. It's garbage. Still, you're allowed to take it out. Now, you're not allowed to go do spring cleaning in your basement for no good reason on Shabbos. But something's disturbing the environment, and that's also the reason why you have crumbs, things which are, used, non-edible on the table anymore. You cracked open nuts, and now all the shells are over your table. Also, Graf Shel Re'i might be the basis for why one could clear their table afterwards. So that's just the same word. That's the only connection. Okay, Amar Shmuel, Kaftuhu Varutz. Let's say they tie the guy down, and then he breaks free and runs. He runs away from Basedin. Putter. He now is exempt from getting any makos. It's like, wait, what the heck? Why? Yeah. It's like the opposite of justice. So you'll see at the end of the Gemara why that is. Mesve, we have a contradiction here. The implication is kala, beim rishon beim b'shnia, poter oso. If the person embarrassed themselves by it doesn't say whether excrement or whatever, I think we'll just say soils. So you could assume you can plug in the sheet those from before, whether it's urine, whether it's excrement, they soil themselves. Even before the first whip. So he still will become pater. He's exempt. Nifzika Ritsua, let's say just the whip breaks on the spot. So Bishnia Potronoso, only once they started the process of giving him makos, and then the whip breaks, they won't continue. But if they never engaged, never started the process, and the whip broke, shkoyach, there'll be something else in the tool shed. And the idea behind it is that, once you got humiliated by receiving the makos, even if you didn't get the full amount, that's enough. Dayenu. Okay, so I just lost the place. I discovered so Bishnia, Potronoso, Rishona, ain't Potronoso. Sorry, I didn't finish the phrase. But initially, though, if you didn't get the first lash yet, then that will not exempt it. But here's the contradiction. Amai lahabi karatz. This guy shouldn't be any worse than the guy who runs away. The guy who runs away before they can get a lash on him. For some reason, he's exempted. But the guy who never gets a lash because the whip broke, he is not exempted. There's something inconsistent over here. Both of them were put down. Both of them, for one got away. One, the whip broke. So why is one exempted from getting makos? The other one isn't. So the answer is, it's a little bit cryptic. Hasam ratz hachalo ratz. There he ran away. Here he didn't run away. Shkoyach, I know he ran away. That's the case. What it's probably saying is that there is a certain form of humiliation to running away. It shows a degree of cowardice that you're so afraid that you ran. And so, especially for a man running away, oh, look at that guy, such a baby, such a loser. He couldn't handle it. And so that humiliation that he gets for running away, as that counts enough to exempt it. But there's no humiliation involved in the whip breaking before you get hit. So therefore, the guy who runs away gets exempt. The guy who doesn't. Now, this doesn't seem to really comport with our notion of justice. You know, if you're supposed to get makos, then you should get makos. You run away, we don't reward you from running away. So that's requires further analysis, that which I have not done. But I have no doubt that there are those who elaborate. Okay, finally, Tana Rabbanan. We're going to have actually a price that contradicts, and there's discussion about how to reconcile them. Just keep in mind. Tanarabanan, Amdu, Lishayoka Kalef, they assess the guy, but they know the moment that they give him the first lash, they know that he will soil himself. Potenoso, we can't give a guy a lash that's going to put him in that position. We're not allowed to do that. Lishayazi Basin Kalef, but if we assess that, no, after he leaves Basin, then he will soil himself. Malkinoso, that we can give him Malkus for. Flo Ode, moreover, Ela Filu Kola Bitchila Malkinoso. Let's say they start giving him lashes. Before they give him lashes, he soils himself. Okay, so they're allowed to go forward and give him Malkus. By the way, this contradicts the Brisa and our Mishnah, which seem to say that if you soil yourself, you are exempt. This Brisa says, no, Dafka, if he soils himself before the process begins, he's not exempted. So there's some work to be done to reconcile. It might be a machlokus, or it might be just a contradiction needs to be resolved between our brises. Shenemar Bikov Nikla, it says he will get lashes and then he will become lowered. Below Shalakakvar Bebastin. But not that he was already got that before already in Bastin. So there you are. And that brings us to the Mishnah. Okay. You know what? Let's just read through the Mishnah and then I'll pause for any questions. I appreciate everyone's patience. This Mishnah will go down very smoothly, I assure you. In fact, this is the final Mishnah in all of Makos. So those who were with us for Mishnah on Friday, when we did that back in the pre-winter days, we did this Mishnah very recently, only was it 2 or 3 weeks ago. So this is the final Mishnah in Makos. And so that should feel like an accomplishment in its own right. Anyone who both is chayv and malchus and kares, we talk about a lot of sins where you get malchus and kares. So when you get malchus, that's an atonement and you no longer have to get kares. Why? It says that your brother, he will be lowered in your eyes. Once that happens, once he gets the malchus, then he becomes like your brother again. That's the reading of the pasuk. Once your brother becomes lower in your eyes, he becomes like a brother to you. Meaning he becomes in good standing. When we say brother, it means a member of the Jewish people in good standing. So we assume once he receives his punishment and he accepts the tshuva, we say that we should put him in good standing again, assuming he has the best, he demonstrates good intent. So we see if one person, a person who commits just one sin, can result in capital punishment. Someone who performs a mitzvah, that his soul will be given unto him, that he will receive great reward for it. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Nimkomuhu Lamad. And we actually learn that from the place that talks about kares. Shenemar, v'nikrasuha nefashos ha'osos. It says, we have sukkim on the bottom. Kikol asher yasin kol ato evos ha'ela. Anyone who will do any of these abominations, this is the parsha of sexual sins. V'nikrasuha nefashos ha'osos mikarev ha'mam. And these the souls of those who perform these things should be cut off from their nation. So we learn from here. But Omer, further it says, turning the page, Asher Yazo some Adam V'chayim, that a person, but however, you look in the pasuk on the side, it then says, because of the previous pasuk, was Vayikra Perek Yuches Pasuk Chav Tes, and this is Perek Yuches Pasuk Hei through Vav. So earlier on, it says, it says, you shall guard all different kind of mitzvahs I give you, and then you will live by them. And then following that begins the parsha of the arayos, so the sexual sins. Ish ish el kol she'er besaro lo sikrevu legalis erva ani Adonai. So what do we see from here? Kol hayoshi, back to the Mishnah on the top. Kol hayoshi bo avar avera. We see what's the Torah asking us to do? It's really funny. The Torah says, actively perform the mitzvahs of God and you will live by them. So you would think the Torah would then give me examples of active positive mitzvahs to perform. But it doesn't do that. It then lists all of these negative mitzvahs, meaning things that we're supposed to refrain from doing, averos, sins. Why would it tell me, perform the mitzvahs of God, so you shall live by them? But then it just tells me things that I'm supposed to refrain from doing. That's to teach us, kol ha-yoshev lo'avar avera, anyone who just abstains passively and refrains from performing a sin, no sin lo schar ka'ose mitzvah. God rewards them as if they actively performed the mitzvah. That's what it comes to teach us. That if you just refrain from doing the arayos, God considers it as if you actively performed a mitzvah, v'chai b'hem, and you shall live and be rewarded for it. Rav Shem bar Rebbe Omer, Harehu Omer, Rak Chazak Levilti Echol Es Hadam, Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh. It says in the Torah, don't eat blood. How many people really want to eat blood? Uma'im Adam Shenaf Shal Adam Kotzni Menu HaPorish Menu Mekabel Schar. It's to teach us that just if God rewards me for abstaining from something that I don't even want to do, I don't even want to eat the blood, but God's going to reward me for it. Gezel v'arayos, theft and sexual morality, which is something that someone is naturally driven towards. Haporish man, he who refrains from them, alachas kama v'kama sheyiskelo l'dorosa l'doros dorosa v'atzup kol hadoros. Certainly, he and his generation. And all the generations that will ensue from him will have a schutz, will have a merit due to this. And then finally, Rabbi Hanani ben Akasha Omer, said, Ratza Kadosh Baruch Hu Zakat Yisrael, God wanted to give us more zechiyos. Why did God give us all these random kind of mitzvos that we wouldn't, or averos that we would never even think to do? Lefika chirbem Torah mitzvos, God wanted to give us more zechiyos, more merit. So he gave us all these different kinds of Torah mitzvot. So you look in Rivan, he ties into the previous part of the Mishnah. Shalai Yitzurik Litzavos Kama Mitzvot Kama Atzorot Al Shkotzim Nevias. God didn't need to give me all these commandments. I need all these different creepy crawly creatures I would never want to eat anyway. I mean, obviously, in some places they do. You know, go to France, eat the snails, whatever it is. But still, She'in Lecha Adam Shino Katz Behen. Nonetheless, God rewards me for that. So Shneamar Adonai Chafetz Lamatzi Kol Yigdol Torah Mi'atir. God gave us numerous mitzvos in order to give us many opportunities to earn schar. So some might say, oh, it's easier to be a non-Jew. I only have 7 mitzvos I need to keep. You know, it's like in general. Yes, it might be easier to be a non-Jew, but the higher the risk, the more options out there, the higher the reward. So that's kind of the situation it is in a Jewish life, that it's a high risk, high reward. We're given many mitzvos, and it means we're charged with a lot more responsibility. But the reward is exponentially greater in that respect. Maybe Nakash Omer, but we don't have Midian and can't do Kaddish Rabbanan. But God willing, at the Siyam, we will be doing Kaddish. I really hope we should have a Minyan there. That should be the case. All right. Rosa, I have to run to a meeting. Zadie, I'll call you actually on my way over back home. I just have to get on a Zoom meeting, and I want to get home on time. It's 8:00. So, Zay, just call me right after. I'll call you in like 5 minutes, okay?
Okay.
All right. Take care, everyone. Have a wonderful night. And please look at your emails. I sent you the link. This link that I sent out today, where you go on the show website, is the actual RSVP form. We will check that to see how many people are coming and order food accordingly. You can invite close friends. You can invite spouse, family members who you think would want to celebrate this occasion with you. Please indicate how many people will be coming on that form. It has a drop down. If you have any questions, please reach out. And I am looking forward to celebrating, God willing, very soon. Very good night.
I think I either missed it or never got the email.